brother. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Right on.
All right. Good evening and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And yeah, Evan, Stu was absolutely right. I am going to copyright. And as always.
I like it. Yeah. And as always, TM.
I don't know anything else to say. So that's why I keep saying that.
But it's also all the hits, all the big ones. You know, let's get that information out the door, right out the top. Boom. We're ready.
Well, let's do this, man. I have been planning to play this speech from Dr. King, one of his greatest speeches ever, before I wound up having to moderate the mayoral. Debate on yesterday, and I really, this is without question one of his greatest speeches, one of my favorites. So we're gonna play quite a bit of it, and not all of it, but quite a bit of it. It's called The Three Evils of the Society, and it could be it's just as apropos today as it was now almost 60 years ago. Dr. King, The Three Evils of the Society.
Let's do it.
Is it in there somewhere, Evan?
Yep, he's coming.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, friends and brothers in this first gathering of the National Conference on New Politics, ladies and gentlemen, can you hear me in the back? I don't know if the Klan is in here tonight or not with all the trouble we're having with these microphones. And seldom, if ever, we're still working with it. As I was about to say, seldom, if ever, has such a diverse and a truly ecumenical gathering convened under the aegis of politics in our nation. And I want to commend the leadership of the National Conference on New Politics for all of the great work that they have done in making this significant convention possible. Indeed, by our very nature, we affirm that something new is taking place on the American political horizon. We have come here from the dusty plantations of the Deep South and the depressing ghettos of the North. We have come from the great universities and the flourishing suburbs. We have come from Appalachian poverty and from conscience-stricken wealth, but we have come. And we have come here because we shared a common concern for the moral health of our nation. We have come because our eyes have seen through the superficial glory and glitter of our society and observe the coming of judgment. Like the prophet of old, we have read the handwriting on the wall. We have seen our nation weighed in the balance of history and found wanting. We have come because we see this as a dark hour in the affairs of men. For most of us, this is a new mood. We are traditionally the idealists. We are the marchers from Mississippi and Selma and Washington, who staked our lives on the American dream during the first half of this decade. Many assembled here campaigned assiduously for Lyndon Johnson in 1964 because we could not stand idly by and watch our nation contaminated by the 18th century policies of Goldwaterism. We were the hardcore activists who were willing to believe that Southerners could be reconstructed in the constitutional image. We were the dreamers of a dream. That dark yesterdays of man's inhumanity to man would soon be transformed into bright tomorrows of justice. Now it is hard to escape the disillusionment of betrayal. Our hopes have been blasted and our dreams have been shattered. The promise of a great society was shipwrecked off the coast of Asia on the dreadful peninsula of Vietnam. The poor black and white, are still perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. What happens to a dream deferred? It leads to bewildering frustration and corroding bitterness. I came to see this in a personal experience here in Chicago last summer. And all the speaking that I have done in the United States before varied audiences, including some hostile whites, the only time that I have ever been booed was one night in our regular weekly mass meeting by some angry young men of our movement. I went home that night with an ugly feeling. Selfishly, I thought of my sufferings and sacrifices over the last 12 years. Why would they boo one so close to them? But as I lay awake thinking, I finally came to myself. And I could not for the life of me have less in patience and understanding for those young men. For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. This situation is all the more ominous in view of the rising expectations of men the world over. The deep rumblings that we hear today, the rumbling of discontent, is the thunder of disinherited masses rising from dungeons of oppression to the bright hills of freedom. All over the world, like a fever, freedom is spreading in the widest liberation movement in history. The great masses of people are determined to end the exploitation of their races and lands. And in one majestic chorus, they are singing in the words of our freedom song, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn us around."
Well.
And so the collision course is set. The people cry for freedom, and the Congress attempts to legislate repression. Millions, yes, billions, are appropriated for mass murder. But the most meager pittance of foreign aid for international development is crushed in the surge of reaction.
All right. So, you know, this is, I think, again, one of his greatest speeches. And in many instances, this is one of the reasons why I believe that Dr. King was assassinated.
I mean, this recognition, yes, you can hear
well,
it. Yo,
well, man. As long as he was integrating lunch counters, that was all right.
Oh, yeah, as but soon as he started talking about wealth inequality, you know?
And when he started talking about the war in Vietnam,
yeah,
it made him the target. And this is, without question, if you haven't heard it, an absolutely astonishing speech that if you didn't know any better, you would think that he was talking about today. And you think back, and those of us who were around at that time, and you listen to this and you say, did we really move in this country? How far had we actually come? I mean, when we listen to what Republicans are talking about today, it is the same thing that was going on, you know, 60 years ago.
And that's why I felt sick all day yesterday to hear these people sort of claiming his legacy.
I know. So I know they always claim his legacy, but what they like to claim is I have a dream.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that. You know, well, Dr. King always said, judge people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. But when we come back, we're going to dig a little deeper. We'll take the phone call that's there, but we're going to dig a little deeper because this is an absolutely astonishing speech by the great one, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.